Football Weekly.
Football Weekly. In today's bulletin, Premier League top draw action from the Big Four, while down below, West Brom and Blackburn, like shoe fetishists, just can't avoid defeat. We ask, are Paul Ince's days as numbered as an advent calendar? And guess which top podcast picked the wrong week to slag off Michael Owen? Elsewhere, there's Sid on Barcelona v the Billy Goats, El Superclásico. A monumental weekend in Serie A with goals galore and the sad truth about English girls and B-days. The final round of the UEFA Cup group stage, the World Clubs Cup, Argentina, all sorts of other stuff, and your post. All that in Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. Here's today's lineup. Big hand, everybody, for Barry Glendening.
Yes, I like a warm hand on my entrance.
Barney Rooney.
Hello, I'm staying a bit away from Barry.
Right, yeah. And no change there then. And Jonathan Wilson.
Hello.
Great to see you, Jonathan.
Great to be back, thank you.
Right. You are the man who knows everything. In fact, you have an interesting fact about the Inuit folk of the northern reaches of the planet.
No? Yeah, I just discovered a book I was reading this week that they believe that the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis,
right,
they're the souls of the dead playing football with a walrus skull.
Right. With a walrus skull?
With a walrus skull, yeah. Which Barney doesn't think is round enough to play football with.
Well, it's just a thought. I mean, I have my own walrus-related anecdote, which I won't share with the pod, because it goes on for quite a long time, and Barry starts to roll his eyes at me.
Right.
But, I think you should. I thought it was quite funny.
Okay, Barney, 30 seconds starts now.
Well, the interesting thing about walruses is that there's one in the Horniman Museum in southeast London,
right,
which was the first walrus kind of brought back to the country. And interestingly, it was blown up by a taxidermist. It was stuffed by a taxidermist who'd never seen a walrus before.
15 seconds.
So he blew it up to its maximum size, whereas it should be a sleek creature with folds
right.
of flesh.
Right.
It became this huge, great, bloated balloon of a walrus. And it's been there for 150 years, looking terribly upset ever since. And that's why we think walruses are large, and possibly why Jonathan thinks their skulls might be the right size to be a football.
Well, it's not Jonathan so much as the Inuit folk of wherever the Inuit...
Who presumably know walruses, because their experience would be direct, maybe not through the Horniman Museum.
Not through the Horniman
also,
Museum.
If you're in the afterlife, I guess a lot of the physical constraints of our material world are perhaps no longer relevant. Just my thought on that. Wonk posts in with a similarly interesting point. He says, question for the pod. Earlier this week, Robin van Persie gave an interview in which he called his weaker right leg his chocolate leg. He claims it's a Dutch football idiom. Does it exist? And if so, why? Or is he making stuff up as he goes along? Do you know this one, Jonathan?
No idea.
All right. We rang Leander, who received such acclaim on his debut the other day as our Dutch correspondent. He says that it is a very, very old-fashioned Dutch football phrase, which he hadn't heard for ages. The basis being that, you know how you get those like chocolate rabbits and stuff? They're hollow, tasty but hollow. And you know,
unlike walruses that have been overstuffed.
Right, I'll move on then. The Premier League, let's see now. Liverpool drew with Hull, Chelsea drew with West Ham, Man United drew at Spurs, and Arsenal drew at Borough. The note says, is this shaping up to be the most exciting Premier League since 1999?
You're looking at me as if I can remember what right. happened in 1999.
Well, Barney then.
Well, in 1999 there were more than two teams with a chance of winning. Right. I mean, I just wonder if this is what passes for excitement these days.
Yes.
The same four teams fail to land a knockout blow and we wonder which underachieving
giant
is going to win the league this year.
And it's Chelsea's problems at home continue. Man United, conversely, have their problems. They score bundles of goals at home, can't score for Toffee away. Curious.
Yeah, seemingly not. I mean, I was at the Arsenal Arsenal game on Saturday, and it was just, I mean, from Arsenal, it was the same old thing. That when they took the lead, it looked like they were going to walk that game. I was there when Middlesbrough lost 5-0 to Chelsea, and they were very, very diffident in that game, Middlesbrough. It looked like the same thing. And then suddenly, a goal out of nothing, a very good cross from Tunjo, great head of Maliadier, and Middlesbrough, yeah, surge of belief, and Arsenal couldn't deal with it. And as somebody doing a match report, it's one of those great games, so the last 20 minutes you're sitting there happily typing away, quite confident nothing is going to happen. And for a team who kind of believe themselves to be top, well, who clearly are top four, who kind of believes themselves still to be Premier League challengers, as Wenger was saying, that's really kind of not that encouraging. I mean, Wenger was saying, and I think he's right, that this is a young team, it needs encouragement, there's a real lack of confidence there. But, you know, that's not going to win them the league this season, is it?
What about Liverpool? Their third straight draw at Anfield. This amidst talk of Rafael Benitez's contract being extended and Keane's stay at in Liverpool being curtailed. Jamie Carragher's now scored 6 own goals. And to be fair, Hull were kind of right to leave dissatisfied with their point, weren't they?
I think Liverpool's big problem was De Sena just couldn't deal with Mendy for pace. I mean, both goals came from down that flank. And yeah, I think if you've got such a glaring weakness, and it's obvious to everybody, you know, this isn't kind of something complicated to explain. It's really obvious to anybody who watches the game. Well, every team's going to do that. Every team's going to exploit that. Mm. So that then makes it very difficult for Liverpool.
So Mendy wasn't De Sena wasn't a particularly smart signing. What about Robbie Keane then? You've got your side 2-0 down. You've got a £20 million striker on the bench. If you're not going to use him, then when?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's clearly got a problem of confidence in front of goal. I think, to be fair, Robbie Keane, and I don't want to get drawn into this argument with Barry because I know he has forceful opinions about this, and I largely agree with him, but he does do... I think people can get carried away with the goal-scoring ratio of strikers. Hmm. And I think with Michael Owen, we've got it the other way around, that we think he does more than he does because he scores a lot of goals.
Interesting.
And I think there's people have a misperception of cause and effect. You don't win games because you're scoring goals. You score goals because you're winning games. So Michael Owen is very useful in that in a mediocre side like Newcastle,
right,
he will get the best out of what they've got.
Right.
But at the very top level, the Champions League level, yeah, he's not going to be able to kind of give you the options, the universality of play that another striker
would. And is that true of Robbie Keane as well?
I think Robbie Keane gives you more than Michael Owen.
Right.
But he's got a problem in front of goal at the moment.
Right.
I'm not sure I really understand that because I was thought...
Me neither.
The Champions League, I mean, games really are won on details. Like, you've got very well-matched teams of extremely athletic, technically gifted players. And if you've got a player like Michael Owen, whose one skill, really, which stands out above other players, is to find a little chance and sniff it out and put it in the back of the net, I would have thought that'd be exactly his level, rather than a lower level where you're expecting more.
Like Inzaghi, for example, who is one of the top scorers in Europe.
I think both of them do a useful job. If the game is tight, if you're desperate for a goal in the last 20 minutes or so, chuck him on and he will get scraps.
But if you're saying Emil Heskey would be more valuable at that level because he does all sorts of things apart from scoring goals.
Yeah, which exactly.
Doesn't the history of Emil Heskey's career suggest otherwise?
Well, maybe an Emil Heskey-type player, maybe Emil Heskey himself isn't quite good enough. But what I would say is that these days, and actually Roy Keane said this after the Bolton game, after his last game, he admitted that by playing two up, by playing Jones and Cissé, suddenly allow themselves to be overmanned in midfield. And I think at Champions League level, if you're playing Michael Owen up front, you have to play somebody alongside him. And that then takes a player out of the midfield. If you play a 4-2-3-1 and your front man is a holder and can hold the ball up, A, it gives you an option to clear the ball out of defence, and B, you've then got three players behind him who can be creative. It gives you far more options, and it gives you the extra man in midfield to control possession.
Interesting. I just want to mention this great stat. Hull's draw at Anfield means that after 17 Premiership games, they've got 27 points, rather. They're in sixth. Same time last season, they played four more games in the Championship and still had the same amount of points as they do now, meaning that they have thus far found it easier going against Premiership opponents than they did in the Championship last season.
Well, they had a fantastic run in the second half of last season. Can I also say that I watched this game on Liverpool FC TV, which
did
for
you?
Some reason I get. Which is actually really entertaining and brilliant. It's like watching people who are obsessed with something and being really entertained by their obsession. It's so biased. It must have been like watching a kind of Stalinist TV station. But their take on the game was that it was a heroic and historic point for Hull, which I thought was rather unfair. I think Hull are actually a really good side,
right,
and very energetic and very well organised, and I think that they did very well, actually.
Well, they played some excellent football, and of course they did have that shout for, was it handball, no? Very early on, that wasn't given.
Yes, that's right.
And Phil Brown reckoned it was because teams like plucky little Hull aren't allowed to go 3-0 up at Anfield.
Decisions like that aren't given in front of the cop, I think was his other point. Which, statistically, he may well be right about. I tell you what, meanwhile, down the bottom end of things, with Christmas approaching, the big questions about sacks and that kind of thing start to appear. Paul Ince's Blackburn notching up yet another defeat yesterday. There were going to be crisis talks at Rovers today, but the chairman's son's getting married, so it's...
No, he got married yesterday.
Oh.
So the chairman was at the wedding yesterday.
So
obviously
he won't be back today. It's been delayed for 24 hours, apparently.
Well, you can't sack your manager the day after somebody's got married.
Yeah. That's apparently all
tradition,
the,
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The Blackburn first team are gone to Dublin on the piss for their Christmas party.
Are they?
Which, well-earned Christmas break.
Right.
But Ince has cancelled Christmas for his training staff.
Yes.
And they'll, I don't know, be in having crisis talks of their own today, I presume.
Well, indeed. He was told that he had to win, what was it, 9 games out of the remaining 22? and promptly saw his team fold like a chocolate team at Wigan. They really were dismal.
I mean, they've lost six in a row.
Yeah.
And I think he should be given a chance to put things right, but I doubt he's going to get one. He might get the weekend game against Stoke.
What will another game, what difference will it make?
It's hard to know, really.
Getting to January, isn't it, and being able to sign some players, that's right. What he would say.
Or lose them in Blackburn's case.
Well, that might not be a bad thing if you've seen Rocky Santa Cruz play recently.
Yeah, bizarrely, a top former player said to me the other day that Rocky Santa Cruz's problems all stemmed from an interview he saw in which the interviewer first congratulated Rocky Santa Cruz for staying and showing loyalty by staying at Blackburn over the summer, but then saying, but don't you think it shows a real lack of ambition? And that ever since, this top former striker is convinced that Rocky Santa Cruz's game has been completely shot by the fact that he's going, oh no.
I wonder what top former striker that could possibly be who's been bending your ear.
I suspect you know exactly who. Ince is still the favourite to be the next person to leave their club, followed by Mark Hughes and then Tony Mowbray, who West Brom gone 11 games without a win, were smashed by Sunderland, of course. Mark Hughes, home defeat by Everton. Ooh, that's a bit poor.
Yeah, I mean, it's not looking good for any of them. Tony Mowbray seems to be under the least amount of pressure of all of them, despite West Brom being rocky bottom of the Premier League and showing no sign that things are about to improve. They're not scoring any goals. I think they've drawn 2 of their last 10 games and lost the rest. But Mowbray, I'm just waiting for, at what point is he going to stop saying, you know, I'll continue to play football the way I think it should be played, and just say, you know, I'm going to buy a big man and start lumping the ball up to him every game.
But I think the problem there is, I mean, they do play very good football in the middle third, but their strikers aren't the right strikers for that. They're the strikers, people like Bednar and Miller. Yeah, they're explosive players. They need the ball quickly, and they're getting the ball. Yeah, they're getting the ball slowly. So the forward line in the midfield just don't. There doesn't seem to be any connection between them.
But that seemed to work in the Championship, didn't it? I suppose it's a different game. You have a lot more of the ball.
Well, and they had Kevin Phillips as well, so they had an extra option up front.
If you were in charge of West Brom, Johnson, what would you do? What players do you think they should sign?
I think they've got to look at the forwards they've got, and they've got to just get the ball forward quicker. So maybe you bring in another holding player. Maybe you bring in players through midfield to get the ball forward faster. I don't think kind of the players who are there are particularly bad. It's just they don't necessarily fit together that well.
Mm. City, meanwhile, anyway, it's only goal difference that's keeping them out of the bottom three, which is certainly not what Abu Dhabi thought that they were purchasing. Back at the end of the summer. A quick question here. I read that Rory Delap was having pain-killing injections for his shoulders. The implication was that this was somehow related to his, tossing activities. I don't know quite how else to put that. And then there was this bizarre throw in which he bished.
Yeah, did you? I saw it on the television.
Yes.
It was strange, yeah.
Are the shoulders now gone? Is that Stoke kaput?
He went off and Sonko started taking the long throws, but they weren't half as effective.
Well, the thing with Sonko, and I was at Newcastle the week on Saturday and Stoke played there, he gets similar distance, but the trajectory is completely different.
Yeah, he's got to be flat and fast.
The laps come in very low, almost horizontal, whereas Sonko's like mortars kind of being lobbed into the box.
Right. Oh, well, so he went off then after that, did he? He tried to throw it and it just kind of dribbled out of his hand.
It was like someone doing a sort of pastiche of a Rory Delap long throw that didn't go very far, and then he sort of wandered off. It was a very strange moment.
Chocolate shoulder, that's the problem there. Now, I did say we were going to talk more about Portsmouth and Newcastle, because it was a bit of a surprise that Newcastle going down there, getting a 3-0 win. We had some posters, Ant-Man, for example, and PA Jeff. Ant-Man says, after our rude remarks about Michael Owen last week, which I tried to then qualify with some stats, and then the stats got torn up by Sean Ingle, who was in iconoclastic mood. Ant-Man says, here we go again. Michael Owen has been added to the list of great players that have been sneered at in recent years by the pod team who he loves, he says, but it does upset him. In the past, Thierry Henry, Gerrard, he reckons that we're now having a Drogba and Berbatov backlash. I'm not entirely sure about that. I don't see what you mean about Berbatov. Tevez, he mentions, but that was Paul Doyle. To our bemusement. But he says, basically, a talent is talent, and for journalists to sound so dismissive sounds like jealousy. He suggests that we're player haters, which is fair enough, really. And PAJF says, goals from 8 yards in count as much as screamers from outside the penalty area. What's that now? 13 goals in 20 Premier League games for Newcastle. He's very effective, Michael.
He scores over goal every 2 games for Newcastle, which is a great record at a club like Newcastle. And a club like Newcastle is his level.
Right. OK, well, so where is he going to be playing his trade post-January? Or is he going to hang on to the end of the season and then...
It's possible he could go to something like Tottenham, I suppose. I mean, I know a couple of Liverpool fans I've spoken to have said they'd like him there on the ground.
Everton?
Well, they are short forwards, aren't they, because of a number of injuries. But I just think if he went to Everton, they'd have to change the way they play. I mean, Everton are great at playing one up and playing five midfield. You can't do that with Owen.
Right.
And so it makes you one-dimensional. Basically, if you stop Owen, you stop the team he plays for scoring.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, that certainly if he played for Everton, you'd probably think... I disagree with Jonathan. I think there's more to come from Michael Owen. I think we're still... He's got, there's been another phase in his career where he will play in the Champions League.
How old is he? 28?
29. Just turned 29 on Saturday. Sunday, yesterday, sorry.
Really?
Yeah. I think the Inzaghi parallel is a good one. I think he could definitely play that kind of role.
But that's essentially coming off the bench or being used occasionally in certain games.
Hey,
I mean, it may be that had Owen played for Liverpool against Hull on Saturday, Liverpool might have won that game, but it will not win Liverpool games against Chelsea, against Manchester United, against top European teams.
Maybe
but
he should move to Italy.
In the past. I mean, when he used to play for Liverpool, he used to win them games.
But football's moved on since then.
Has it really?
Yeah.
Barry, you're going to explain
it's a very different game.
Yes, it's tactically evolved in the last 10 years. I mean, a lot of teams played 4-4-2 10 years ago. You look now, look at Euro 2008, 8 of the 16 teams in that began with one up front, 10 of the 16 finished with one up front, including the two finalists.
I mean, I think football changes with the wind, to be honest. I think there's always a place for a player who can score goals. I don't think that match has been kind of ruled out of the game yet.
Well, that's probably enough Premier League for now. In a second or two, we're going to be turning our thoughts to the wide world of the European game. Big weekends in Spain and Italy. News on that coming after this.
Football Weekly from Guardian.co.uk.
Big weekend in Serie A. Sid Lowe will be up, of course, in a second or two. But big weekend in Serie A. 41 goals scored. 6 of them came in the big match Sunday night at Stadio Olimpico in Turin, which for once had an absolutely rocking atmosphere. It was deafening. As Juve beat Milan 4-2. It was quite tight until Gianluca Zambrotta got himself sent off. Milan had pulled it back to 3-2, but then after that, Juve made it 4-2 with Amauri, and they could have made it 5-2. Del Piero hit the post. Amauri scored his 11th and 12th of the season. Milan just looked awful, awful at the back. And I guess the good news for them is the fact that, as you may have seen, they appear to have sewn up the signing of Thiago Silva off of Fluminense, a very highly rated Brazilian defender who was certainly one of the stars of their Olympic campaign. And he's from Fluminense, a lot of interest from around Europe, a lot of talk even of Chelsea being up for him as a possible replacement for the want-away Alex. But he was in Milan this weekend signing papers and that kind of thing. But he won't join until next season. Barry?
I was just going to ask, this Amauri guy who scored 2 goals for Juventus, who tell me about him?
Well, Amauri came to light really at Palermo. And was one of their kind of long tradition of big men up front who score lots of goals, a la Luca Toni, which is where Luca Toni really hit the headlines. And the curious thing about him is that he does, by virtue of his grandparents, have the possibility to play for Italy. And the willy-won't-he saga of will he play for Italy, will he get a Brazil call-up, has been rumbling on for ages. But anyway, he was signed this season by Juve as a replacement for Trezeguet, really. And Trezeguet then promptly got injured for the rest of the season anyway. So, and he's been absolutely brilliant. 12 goals so far.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask you another question about forwards. If you, the stories about Adriano Drogba swap deal.
Let's come on to that then. Yeah, Inter, who, as we say, are 6 points clear of Juventus there at the top of the table, they won on Sunday 4-2 against Kiev. It was top versus bottom. It was a lot tighter than expected. Ibrahimovic, another very modern player, with the 2 goals to win it. Absolute class he was. But the big story is the continuing disaster with Adriano, who was played against Werder Bremen and then basically sent home after that because he turned up. The rumour is that he turned up in a slightly worse for wear state at training the next day. And of course, this has been a perennial problem with Adriano. He's now got a bit of a muscle niggle. They sent him back to Brazil, which is not usual. They said, you're not going to play, so go and take care of it in Brazil. Mourinho's saying it's purely a medical thing, but Mourinho has also said that he should begin to think it might be a good idea for him to think about himself in other clubs, Adriano. Mourinho also said, after Mihalovic, who was the assistant manager at Inter last season, said, well, they're having exactly the same problems with Adriano that we had last year, him and Mancini, when Mancini was the manager, and we got slaughtered for it in the press. They said we're incompetent. How come Mourinho doesn't either? Sorry. And Mourinho replied, well, I think Adriano deserves a second chance. After all, they give second chances to people who spit in other people's faces, like Mihalovic. So
Mihailovic had a great start at Bologna, though, hasn't he?
Well, he had five straight draws.
Then a 5-2 win against
And then this
Torino.
Weekend, a 5-2 win over Torino, who'd just appointed a new manager, Walter Novellino. Which, you know,
not that new, is he? Because he's just
come back. Yeah. He was there last season, and they got rid of him. He's the players, by all accounts, are not fans of. They went 1-0 up actually, Torino at Bologna. Bologna came back and won 5-2. Three goals from Marco Di Vaio, erstwhile Italy striker. And Bologna, of course, have this tradition of taking 30-something former Italy greats-ish in Di Vaio's case, a la Baggio, a la Signori, and Di Vaio is doing much the same thing. 12 goals. So far this season.
Sorry, anyway, if I could just go back to Adriano. Is he just, like, fond of a pint, or is he a raging alcoholic?
Well, it seemed that he'd sorted his problems out. I think he was very lonely where he was living in Italy. His father died. There were all sorts of other issues that happened, and I think he was taking refuge, by his own admission, in the bottle. And when he came back this season, it was all, and I've sorted myself out, I'm going to clean living, and that lasted a couple of weeks, and then it's been off and on, this story of turning up late for training or all this kind of thing. So an absolutely astonishing talent when he first arrived in Italy. Mm. And I remember a game that he played for Inter at Valencia where he looked like nothing on earth. But he's a big guy, and he just doesn't seem to. I think alcohol, problems of bad living, if you're a big player, are going to have that much bigger an impact on your ability to actually.
I was just going to agree with you. As a football player, it's a terrible tragedy. I mean, he was fantastic. I remember him playing for Brazil at the Olympics, and he was head and shoulders. And it's very modern as well, very modern striker, big.
Ticks that box, doesn't he? That modernness. Anyway, so apparently... there
is this got an old-fashioned look from Jonathan.
Right. Adriano, there's this talk that they might send him to Chelsea plus £10 million for Drogba. Personally, I can't see Scolari leaping at that one. Of course, Scolari's worked with Adriano with the Brazilian national side. Roma beat Cagliari 3-2. The winner from Vucinic, 92nd minute, tore off his shirt. He had another shirt underneath to avoid... getting booked, but the referee booked him anyway. He said, "Why, ref, I've got another shirt on." And the referee said, "Yes, but you've taken your shorts off as well, haven't you?" Which he said, "Yes, I have."
I read about that. He was very unhappy that he got booked for removing his shorts.
Right.
But he said the reason he did so was because he'd had a bad game, and he was so happy that he scored. He felt physically ill with happiness.
Right.
And decided to strip.
Who'd be a footballer, eh? And, Roma move up into the top half of the table. Napoli, let's mention them because they are now fourth, level with Milan on points, but just behind them on goal difference in the Champions League position, which would be huge to have the Southern Giants in the Champions League. They had a 3-0 win over Lecce. Not all is well, though, because a lot of their players, who they've done brilliantly at uncovering players that nobody else really fancied. Hamzik, Lavezzi, Ezequiel Lavezzi, El Pocho, Santa Croce at the back. A lot of their players are the subject now of sniffing around the manoeuvres from Europe's bigger clubs. And Aurelio De Laurentiis, the Italian film producer who has been running the club for how long now? About 6 years, I think. Now. He's not very happy about it. He says, these Hamziks, the Lavezzis and Garganos, we made them. They weren't with us a couple of years back. We still managed to get up in Serie A without them. And frankly, if they, he says, mi fanno incazzare, if they piss me off, then we can see about their contracts. If somebody wants to go to England, because Chelsea apparently after Hamzik, midfielder, and Lavezzi, if somebody wants to go to England, they can go right ahead. But, says De Laurentiis, they should know that there, you live badly, you eat badly, and the women don't use bidets. They don't know what they are.
Is that true?
That girls don't use bidets. Bidet is not a widespread phenomenon, plumbing-wise, in this country.
It's never really taken off.
Right.
Bidets.
I mean, I'm all in favour of bidets. De Laurentiis has a point.
You can get those tubes you put under the rim, though, that kind of create the spurt, so you can't...
No,
that's a plumbing malfunction. It's not meant to be happening.
I have to say that I think the Brazilian solution is even better. Instead of having a bidet, a separate thing, they have almost like a shower head on a flexi tube, which you can use to do really whatever you want. Clean the bowl, clean
yourself. That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Well, this is a tube that you...
But it fits under the inner rim and then...
This comes as a separate faucet.
Okay.
Right.
Can I ask as well, have you any idea why there's so many home wins in Italy?
Go on, tell us this stat, Jonathan.
In top flight games this season, in England, 41% have been won by the home team. In Italy, 58%. That seems to be a huge difference.
It is.
Any ideas why? I mean, just to kind of give you a comparison, Germany and France is 44 and Spain is 48.
Right.
Come on, Jimbo, let's be having you.
I've been thinking about this for a couple of days, and I can't think of any reason.
You can't?
No, I really can't.
Well,
is that how you spend your weekend? working out stats and then sitting there thinking about it?
Why? What do you do?
Much the same thing.
What would favour home team? The refereeing, possibly?
Well, I was wondering if it might be something to do with travelling away fans, but I don't know.
Well, it's true this season. In fact, that's a very good point, that there are a lot of clubs who are not allowed to bring any away fans to their games, Napoli, for example. So that might have some sort of impact on it. It might just be as well that they play a more conservative game in Italy, and thus they would be happy with the draw away, although certainly results like this weekend. So it might be that teams are just aiming less for a win away, although I don't want to damn Serie A or tar it with a conservative brush. So I genuinely don't know, but it is an enormous difference, isn't it, statistically?
Yeah, so I mean, if anybody has any ideas...
Right. Clever people, do let us know. Jonathan Wilson doesn't know. So there you go. Time now for another little musical interlude, after which Sid Lowe joins us from Spain. Now, Sid Lowe, hello there.
Hello there.
Hello there to you. Barry Glendenning, Barney Roney, and Jonathan Wilson are here with me. And Barry, your honour of the first question goes to you.
Well, obviously, Super Clásico was on over the weekend.
Yes.
Barcelona won 2-0, so the obvious question to ask is, Sid, do you have a bidet in your bathroom?
I have a sink. Does that count?
Do you use it for bidet purposes?
I imagine that if I tried to, it would probably mean the sink collapsing, pulling away from the wall and flooding the bathroom, wouldn't it?
No, not necessarily.
It depends how heavy you are. In my case, yeah. It probably would, yeah.
All right, then. Interesting. Listen, Barcelona Real 2...
We're starting with the big topics this week, aren't we?
Yeah. No, but 2-0, and Real continue to go down the pan. Can we? Yeah. All right. They're now, what, sixth place? Is it time, Sid, for the Madrid Cabrón Saluda El Campeón songs to begin?
It already is. The Barcelona fans were chanting that at the weekend.
Oh,
they were,
right.
At the back end of the game, they were chanting the Madrid Cabrón song. That is something that particularly irritated Michel Salgado after the game. He was very interesting in the post-match kind of media scrum. And he said in an interview that the thing that really hurt him was hearing the Barcelona fans celebrate the league in December and the players, he claimed, as well, celebrating the league in December. And as he said, that will serve as motivation for us to haul them back and to really go for them. He also said when he was, you know, when he was told, well, yeah, but the thing is, it's 12 points. And he turned around and said, it's not 12 points. It's 9, because they will lose at the Santiago Bernabeu. Of course, I mean, he's got a point in so much, as Real Madrid has shown before, that they can come back from difficult situations. It is very, very early in the season. It's only 15 games in. But in a way, the 15 games makes it even more striking that Barcelona have managed to be able to pull back 12 points on Madrid in 15 games, to be that far ahead of them already. And at this stage of the season, no one who's ever been this far behind has ever gone on to win the league in Spain.
Well, interesting. Can you just explain for our listeners the song a bit more fully?
Well, basically, the song goes, Madrid Cabrón Saluda al Campeón, which is Madrid, you word that we probably shouldn't say.
Well, it's technically a billy goat, though, but I think it's...
Well, yeah, officially it is a billy goat, yeah, right. But it's quite a lot stronger than that. It's,
right.
Madrid, you, I mean, you can probably use either the B or the A word, although I'll leave you to guess which B and A word. You salute the champions. Now, the reason it's significant is obviously the basic one, which is that Barcelona fans love to rub around their noses in it. But it's become particularly significant in the last few years because Barcelona players over the course of history have tended to take the microphone when they've celebrated titles and chant this down to the celebrating fans below from the balcony, you know, when they're kind of offering the trophies to the fans in the streets. And very famously, Luis Figo did it, of course, before defecting and going over to Real Madrid. And also, more importantly, very famously recently, Samuel Eto'o did it and chanted this song. Of course, he'd begun his career at Real Madrid. He then apologised 2 days later and said, I shouldn't have spat on the plate where my food was once given to me. But Madrid fans enjoyed giving it back to him last year, and now Barcelona fans are giving it back once again.
Right. Well, it does seem like a monumental act of hubris to be celebrating the title this early in the season. But as you say, they are 8 points clear of their nearest challenger, Valencia, and 12 ahead of Real Madrid, who held out bravely for, what, about 70 minutes, was it? And then Messi and Eto'o finally undid all Casillas' fine work. I noticed that you called Messi the best in the world in your report, Sid. Why is that? And surely he'd be in the Premier League if that were really so.
I don't think there's any real reason to say that means he has to be in the Premier League. I mean, you tell me a Premier League club that's as big as Barcelona or Real Madrid now. Italy, Real Madrid are a disaster right now, and Barcelona were a disaster last season. But in terms of the size of the clubs, I don't think there's any reason to assume he should have to be in the Premier League.
Right. I was kind of joking.
Oh, well, that's all right. But, okay, well, that's an answer. But surely he would be. Yes. I think he is the best player in the world. I think that it would be something that would probably be recognised a little bit more broadly if he hadn't had terrible injuries over the last 3 years. I mean, in truth, the last 3 years, he's always looked like he might be and then been cut down by injury at key times. Obviously, the hope is that that won't happen to him this year.
Right.
And I think he needs, and I do think this is true, certainly, he needs a big Champions League campaign to really confirm that. Because, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo last year won the Champions League. Messi hasn't done so because when Barca won it a couple of years ago, he was left out of the starting 11 against Arsenal.
Mm. Well, compounding Real's misery is the fact that Atletico Madrid are now above them after, was it, 14 games unbeaten?
14 games unbeaten, yeah, it's really quite impressive. Basically, Atletico Madrid have been unbeaten since they last played Real Madrid. And I'll tell you something, even if they go unbeaten until the next time they play Real Madrid, they will still lose to Real Madrid. I must say, I'm surprised. I thought that I'm not surprised that they've gone on a good run because I think they've got very, very good players at the top of the pitch, and the two forwards and the two wide men in midfield are all playing fantastically good football. The rest of the side isn't great. But I'm surprised that they took advantage last night because they went into the game knowing that they had Madrid within their sights. And generally speaking, with Atletico over the last few years, that's been a sign for them to collapse. It didn't happen this time, and it is kind of galling for Real Madrid, this. But there's been a weird reaction to the Clásico, you know. I mean, despite the defeat, despite the fact that they're now 12 points adrift, despite the fact that they've got lots of players injured, despite the fact they've got Atletico Madrid in front of them, Real Madrid's fans are actually treating this as a good result, or at least a good performance.
Wow.
So I was just wondering, has there been any comment in the papers or anything about the seemingly orchestrated campaign to kick Messi out the game?
I mean, well, you can imagine that there has been in Barcelona. There hasn't been in Madrid. In Madrid, it's a heroic performance. It was very tough. They were aggressive. They were defensive, but it was what they had to do. In Barcelona, yeah, there's been a lot of criticism of this. And I think that one of the things that this is really highlighting yet again, of course, is that the press is in Spain deciding on its, if you like, on its conclusion, depending on which colour shirt it's wearing. So, for example, a couple of years ago, Leo Messi scored that brilliant Diego Maradona goal against Getafe in the Copa del Rey. Getafe's coach, of course, was Bernd Schuster. Barcelona won 5-2. In the second leg, Schuster basically... In fact, I think in the second leg, Messi was left out to protect him because at the back end of that game, Schuster sent his player to kick the living daylights out of Messi. And everyone in Spain complained and said, you know, you can't do this. It's not fair. This is a great player. You know, we want football to be creative and we want football to be about players like this. And, of course, now that Real Madrid have done it, the reaction's rather different, as, of course, the reaction would be if Barcelona did it to a Real Madrid player. And I think that is something that some people have picked up on, but perhaps not as much as they would have done. Incidentally, the remark that Pep Guardiola said to the referee of the game, Medina Cantalejo, that almost got him sent from the bench, was he stood up to Cantalejo and shouted at him, "Are you going to protect Messi or am I going to take him off and ruin this match?"
Interesting. Barry.
So just one last question. Royston Drenthe, is he the worst player ever to play for Real?
No, he's not the worst player ever to play for Real. There's been plenty of players worse than him, trust me. I feel a little sorry for Drenthe, but the truth is he's technically he's not particularly refined, shall we say, but he tries really, really hard, which is something that a lot of his teammates simply haven't done so far this year, although, of course, they did at the weekend. I think there's a feeling at Real Madrid that... Well, let's say that he's not very subtle, that he races around the pitch a little bit out of control. So much so, you know, his nickname within the club now, of course, bearing in mind that Drenthe in Spanish is said in a sort of way. It takes out the TH sound, so rather than being Drenthe, it's Drenthe. At the club, he's known as Axi Drenthe.
Sid, thanks very much for that. I know you'll keep us up to date on all the developments in the transfer market as we head towards January. In the meantime, thank you very much. We'll speak to you later in the week, I hope.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Sid. Cheers. Comprehensive stuff there, as usual, from Sid Lowe. One or two other little bits to talk about before we leave you today. Champions League debate that we had last, when was it, on Thursday. Jerry Carvalho speaking for many, saying Mr. Honigstein's cogent argument in favour of the group stages, Barry, completely blew away this crap, the group stages idea, which until now, I, says Jerry Carvalho, subscribe to. Lots of others expressing the same thing.
I disagree.
Well, I know you do.
I wasn't here on Thursday, but no. I did listen to the pod and yes. Was... expecting you to have bruises when you give, because it just turned into a big shouting match, and I thought it might have erupted into violence, which producer Pete may have snipped out. But
just to more entertaining than the Champions League group stages.
But I Smythe, Rafa, can you imagine? And Sean Ingle. It was never really going to turn into the WWF.
But I just find it odd that I seem to disagree with every single thing that Rafa says.
Right.
I'm totally disagreeing with him always for some reason. I don't think we've ever agreed on anything.
Is that so?
Yeah.
He probably thinks you have agreed on things.
Yeah. Thinks you're soulmates, Barry.
Blue Moon 99. What was that thing about spraying the pitch with foam in Argentina? Why do they do that? Sorry, I missed it. It's to show the distance that the wall has to stand, how far back the wall has got to stand, and you spray it on and it's there for about 30 seconds and the players can't go beyond that line.
Isn't that already in
use
in
Brazil?
Or
yeah, they've been using it. Yeah. Other stuff, lots of bits that ordinarily we wouldn't be able to offer much expertise on, but Jonathan Wilson, you're a cornucopia, a world encyclopedia of football, so I bet I could try you on these. Let's see. Thursday morning, Man United are taking on Gamba Osaka in the Club World Cup, I should call it. Gamba Osaka beat Adelaide United 1-0 to go into the semi-final there against United. Do you know about that?
Well, I saw Gamba back in September against Urawa in the semi-final of the Asian Champions League.
Right.
And it was the game in Osaka, it was their home game, and they were awful. They drew 1-1, but how they went on to win the thing, I have no idea. I mean,
have you seen Adelaide United?
I haven't.
That might be a clue in there.
Maybe I got them on a bad day, but if that really is the best team in Asian football, then oh dear.
So no problem for Man United going through to the final, you think?
If they take it seriously. But I think now that they're out there, then yeah, they've got to take it seriously, haven't they?
Right, OK. Germany went into its winter break with Hoffenheim and Bayern tied atop the table. Hoffenheim ahead on goal difference. Only 3 points between the top five. You've got Hertha, Hamburg, and then Bayer Leverkusen after them. In Argentina, even tighter because the Apertura Championship ended in a three-way tie on Sunday night with San Lorenzo, Boca Juniors and Tigre. Or Tigre, I'm not sure. Do you know that, Jonathan?
Tigre,
yeah. Okay. They all won their final games. So they finished level on points at the top. It forces a playoff for the first time in the tournament's history. They're going to have a three-way playoff on December the 17th, 20th and 23rd.
Yeah, I mean, Boca did their best to chug it away as well, because they were 3-0 up after half an hour against Colón and then conceded two and were desperately clinging on at the end. Oh, as far as I can tell from following it on the Olé website.
Right.
But, I mean, this has been a kind of tough season for Boca. Their president died. They've had injuries to Palermo and Palacios.
How did he die, Jonathan?
I
don't know why we're laughing about this man's sad demise.
He had a heart attack, I understand.
Yeah, right. I mean,
was he engaged in strenuous physical activity at the time, Barry?
I don't know.
I heard a rumour that he was engaged in some very strenuous...
Gardening? Digging potatoes or something?
Exactly. Now,
what a way to go, though.
Indeed so. Ligue 1, Lyon took on Marseille, which could have seen somebody else at the top of the French league for the first time since, I don't know, probably the days of Robespierre or something. But anyway, Lyon drew 0-0 with Marseille, so let's not chat about that. Although I'm sure you could, Jonathan, if you put your mind to it. Similar feelings about the UEFA Cup group stages concluding on Wednesday and Thursday this week. It says here on my piece of paper that Schalke, Olympiacos, Sevilla and Spurs among these sides who have not yet confirmed their passage to the round of 32. Right. Okay. Spurs, of course, got a big injury crisis, haven't they?
Have they?
Yeah, they have. Well, Genus is out injured after the Man United game.
All right.
And Woodgate is out too. Lady King is...
Well, Woodgate was in hospital.
Was he?
Yeah, fears he may have had a serious kind of recurrence of his old problem.
Oh, right. Which was...
Where you want to
start?
Back
injury.
All right, okay.
Yeah, general brokenness.
All right. And he, of course, that leaves Harry Redknapp with all sorts of problems because Ledley King is back to being crook.
What do people think about Ledley King? I mean, he basically does half a job, doesn't he? I was just thinking, does he get paid a full wage for that?
It's a bit like the Paul McGrath thing, isn't it? The Paul McGrath, by the end, because of his knee problems, couldn't train, but he was good enough that it was worth kind of persevering.
Yeah, did he only play half the games, or did he just turn up on a match day? And...
I think he just turned up on a match day, didn't he? But
So there you go. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today, unless there's anything else we haven't mentioned that we should. Probably there is.
I think there's lots of things we've mentioned that we shouldn't have.
Very nice. So I bid you all farewell. Many, many thanks for joining us today, Barry, Barney and Jonathan Wilson and producer Pete. Excellent stuff. Thanks for tuning in, people there at home or wherever you're listening, and we'll be back on Thursday.